In the visitor, in the seat back pocket in front of you, you'll see these things. We call them visitor's cards. We typically ask people to fill this out so we'll have a record of their attendance. I don't know about you, but I don't do that kind of thing. When I go to websites and they tell me they want my name and address, I always skip that website because I don't freely give out my name and address. I don't want to be pestered all the time. We live in a day and an age when people are afraid to share their personal information because they, frankly, that personal information has been abused by so many people in so many ways. So we're going to change the focus of this card that's in the pew back in front of you. And we're going to give people an opportunity to let us know that there's something that we can pray about that they're concerned about. And what we're going to ask them to do is write down their prayer request for us. Because after all, we're here because we approach God. So we're going to ask people to write down their prayer request. And on the back side, if they choose, we're going to ask them to give us a name and a phone number so that one of the elders can give them a call to get more information about their prayer request if we need to. So we're not asking them for their name and phone number. We're asking them to let us know about anything that we can pray about. Now, that makes sense. What's going to happen is, and you who are here this evening are the people that will probably notice, Kim is going to stand up and go out to the office during the first part of the sermon because she's heard these things before. They get practiced on her at home. She usually improves them quite a bit before they get repeated for you guys. So be thankful that she is my best critic. But she's going to compile these and then make sure that the elders have that list of prayer requests that were dropped in the collection basket. And then we can pray very quickly about those things as we're dismissed. So our goal is to make people aware of the fact that we think prayer makes sense. We think prayer makes a difference in people's lives, and we want them to let us know about things that we can pray about. Now, that's not just for visitors. That's for anybody that needs prayer. Fill one of these cards out. We'll have them replaced very shortly. Fill one of those cards out. Put your prayer request down on that card so that we'll know what we can pray about. We want to be efficient about our prayers. We want to be effective with our prayers. And beyond doing that, during the course of our worship, we're going to have a prayer meeting at my house on Monday night. One of the elders is going to lead each of those prayer meetings. We may get all three elders coming to the prayer meeting, but we're going to meet together specifically for the purpose of praying about those things that we've been asked to pray about. Now, it may be something very specific. It may be that you have cancer, you've just received a diagnosis, and you need prayer, and you need it quickly. It may be that you're just facing a general sense of malaise and you can't seem to shake it. That may be the nature of your prayer request. But we're going to call that our prayer circle. And everybody is invited to come to my house on Monday nights. We'll meet about 7 o'clock. Seven o'clock good? We'll meet about 7 o'clock at my house. And we'll be praying about those things that people have asked us to pray about. So be watching for the prayer circle to start. We're going to meet next week on Monday at my house. And that means that we're going to have to clean up a whole lot of stuff at my house. But we're going to meet next week at my house. And we're going to pray about the requests that people have for us. So if you drop one of these cards into the collection basket and one of the elders Kim will compile them very quickly for the elders. If one of the elders thinks we need to get more information, they'll get in touch with you on Sunday afternoon or maybe Monday to get the information that will let us pray effectively about the request that you have made. So I hope that that makes sense to you. That's really what we're here for, is to help people get through life. And we know that the best way to do that is to have a relationship with God and to talk about the things that are happening in our lives. So if you can, come to my house 7 o'clock on Monday. We're going to pray. That's our only purpose, is to meet together to pray. So we'll call that the prayer circle. That's going to happen. And you'll see more about that as we ramp that up and as we start to do that more and more. I read through the Bible, or I try to read through the Bible, once a month. And it just so happens that every time I get to the book of Ecclesiastes, I run into these statements that are just so surprising to me. Many times I read the statements in the book of Ecclesiastes and I think, how did somebody have the wisdom to write that down? I know that there was inspiration involved. But I'm struck by what God says and how uncommon God's common sense really is. And that's what happened in Ecclesiastes, the 7th chapter, at verse 10. At some point tonight, I'll probably call that Ephesians. Y'all just make that transition for me, because I get Ephesians and Ecclesiastes mixed up. Ecclesiastes, the 7th chapter, at verse 10, passage that we've already read, God said, through the mouth of inspiration, "Do not say, 'Why is it that the former days were better than these?' It is not from wisdom that you ask about that." The King James Version is a little bit different than that. The King James translation says, "Say not thou, 'What is the cause that the former days were better than these?' For thou dost not inquire wisely concerning this." The Good News Translation helped me a little bit as I was trying to sort of put this thought into action in my life. The Good News Translation says, "Never ask, 'Oh, why were things so much better in the old days?' It's not an intelligent question." And it's a question that I ask. I have been prone to saying, "You know, the good old days were so much better than what they are today." And I ask it about political events. I ask it about my marriage. I ask it about my relationships with the people that are around me. Why is it that the good old days were so good? Kim was just enthralled when I came home. She greeted me at the door with a big old kiss. And now it's just, you know, I come home and it's like, okay, Dean's home again. So I'm as prone as anybody to think and to almost yearn for the good old days. As I thought about that, there are two things that really impress me. The first is that time and distance have a tendency to blur our memories of the past. Think about what happened to the Israelites, Numbers the 14th chapter. At verse 1 beginning, you remember they come out of Egypt and they're facing difficulty as they cross the desert. And they actually said to Moses, "We'd have been better off if you left us in Egypt. Here we are out here in the desert. We're going to starve." And they were yearning for slavery. Can you imagine? It doesn't take a long time to forget that the good old days probably weren't quite as rosy as you remember them. Do you really think that being a slave in Egypt, building buildings out of bricks without straw, you had to just build the bricks yourself and then build the buildings, and every time you turned around, they increased your quota? That was the good old days. But that's what they had done. They fondly remembered what was happening in Egypt. They had all that they wanted to eat. Well, that probably wasn't true either. But they had all that they wanted to eat. And they had a place to live. And now here they are with Moses. They've come across the sea. They're in the desert. They don't even have a place to lay their head that they can count on. Oh, wouldn't it be great to be in the good old days? You know, we do the same thing. We have a tendency to fondly remember all of those things that we used to be involved in. Have you ever felt that way? You become a Christian and you put away a lot of things that were so troubling in your life, and immediately you're thrilled about the fact that you're released from the difficulties that you face every day when you weren't a Christian. And then at some point you think, wow, I had so much more fun. I had so many more friends. And I did so many things. And it was so great. But now I'm a Christian, and every time I turn around, I've got somebody telling me I shouldn't do this and I shouldn't do that. And I don't have the friends that I used to have, and I can't do the things that I used to do. And wasn't it great I could go to parties and get drunk and go stick my head in a toilet? You know, how great that was. The good old days weren't really all that good when you get right down to it. Peter says, he uses some really colorful language when he writes about it. He says, the dog is returned to its own vomit. You wanted to go back to the good old days. After you've experienced God, is like going back to your own vomit again. Well, I don't want to do that. But I must confess to you that there are times when those thoughts occur to me. I hope you're like me, but those thoughts probably occur to you as well. So the first thing that we can say is that time and distance blur our remembering the past. We don't quite remember it the way it really was. We fondly exchange it for something that we wish we used to have, but we didn't. So the first thing that I would say as I think about this is, take an honest appraisal of where you used to be and compare it to where you are now. And invariably, where you are now is going to be better than where you used to be. So, it's not from wisdom that you ask this question. And then there are a number of other things that kind of occur to me that in some ways they might be true, but there's a different way to look at it. Now, let me see if I can explain this for a minute. I become a Christian, and I am so excited because I have become a Christian. Everything is fresh and new, and I get to pray, and I know these people, and they care about me, and there is no sense in which there's an ulterior motive in the way that they care about me, and it's so great to be around these people, and I just love everything about it. But then it seems like all that gold turns into gray matter, and we're just not as excited as we were when we first put on Christ, when we first became Christians. And it may be that we have slipped away from faithfulness. that we just don't care as much as we used to. And the New Testament warns us about slipping away from our faithfulness. It may be that that's the problem. It may also be that we made a mistake, and we mistake being more profoundly blessed today with what we used to have, which was an enjoyment of just a little bit of the blessings. But as we become accustomed to those blessings and we participate in them more fully, it can seem like they're kind of old hat. Well, they're not old hat. They're still profound blessings. It's just that as we submit to God and as we become more deeply involved with Him, those things just pass away. We don't think about those things. So it could be that we're mistaking the tranquility of mind that follows a deeper submission to God for just not caring as much, not being as excited about knowing the blessings of God. We become more and more and more like God. So it could be that we've slipped away from faithfulness. It could be that we are more profoundly involved with God, and it's just not the red hot passion that we once felt. It could be that you might think, well, you know, I'm just not as holy now as I once was. I yearn for the time when I was more holy. And it may be true that we have allowed our spotless garments to be tarnished, that we have taken the clean clothes that God gave us at baptism and we've kind of sullied them. We've begun to participate in things that take us away from God. So it may be that we've allowed our spotless garments to be sullied. It may also be that we're more conscious of our own imperfections. I'm impressed with the way that the people that were approved in the great judgment scene that's presented in Matthew when God divides between the sheep and the goats, and He says, to those that are condemned, I was hungry, I was thirsty, I was naked, you didn't clothe me. And then He turns to the others and He says, enter into the joy of your Father. And they say, when did we ever see you naked or hungry, or you were in prison and we came and visited you? And Jesus says, inasmuch as you did it to the least of these, my brethren, you did it unto me. Sometimes we can make a serious mistake and think that because we're doing so much better, we ought to be doing great things. It's little things that add up. I was talking to a fellow one time who had been preaching in Africa. And as he was telling about preaching in Africa, he talked about how 104 degrees and people would walk 10 miles just to get to a place where they could meet with other Christians, and they didn't have air conditioning, they didn't have anything at all. And I looked at that and I thought, that's amazing. These people are really devoted to God. And he said, no, the people that are really devoted to God are the people who go to worship when it's 35 degrees below zero. And they don't think about it. So it's possible that we become more conscious of our own imperfections because we're doing a better job. And that's sad. You can't yearn for the good old days because you're not as holy, when in fact, you may be more holy. It could be that we're mistaking spiritual growth for something less than what it is. It may be that we look at ourselves and we think, you know, I'm just not progressing in the faith the way that I used to. Does anybody else write things in their Bibles when somebody says something and you find it especially profound? You write it down in the margin of your Bible and you're so excited about that. And you think, oh, this is so insightful. How impressive this is. Well, I'm one of these guys that's had the same Bible for 50 years. And my kids knew that you couldn't touch Dad's flat Bible. I still have that flat Bible. The print got smaller. I don't read out of that one as often as I used to. But every once in a while, I get that Bible down and I start reading through that Bible with my magnifying glass. And I find things that are written in the margins and I think, well, why did you ever write that down? Everybody already knows that. That's not worth citing. Everybody understands that. So at one time, I thought that I was progressing. I was learning. I was hearing new things. And it was so impressive to me. And then I get to the point where I already knew that. And so I make a mistake. It could be that we just stop growing. Hebrews, the 12th chapter. Clear warning about letting sin that so easily besets us deter us from running the race the way that we should. That's clearly a warning. It's clearly possible that we can let go of what we once had. But it may also be that we're just experiencing something called asymptotic growth. You know what asymptotic means? This is the statistician faculty talking to you now for just a minute. It's a lot harder to go from getting 98% to getting 99% of the questions correct on a test than it is to go from getting 20% of the questions correct to getting 50% of the questions correct. When you're just learning, you learn really fast. And that's the way it should be. But as you begin to learn and you begin to better appreciate the things of God, it's harder and harder and harder to make these giant leaps like you used to make. You know, that's why they say kids may not learn a foreign language faster than adults do. It's just that they start with nothing. And they start learning just a little bit, and it looks so impressive to them and to us. And then I'm trying to learn a foreign language, and I have trouble remembering whether it's C-A-E or C-E-A. I studied Latin, okay? And so what I'm struggling with is the finer point of getting from 98 to 99. I was making fantastic progress when I was going from 20 to 60. So it's asymptotic growth. The curve of our growth looks like this. It slows down. That's always the case. And it may be that our first experience with this new life is so exciting because we're learning so much and we're growing so rapidly. We're progressing in terms of our faith. Now we're not progressing that fast. And it may be a mistake to think that we're still not progressing. Sometimes I think I just don't love God as much as I once did.
And it may be true. Revelation, the second chapter, and at verse 4, in particular, the apostle writes to the Ephesian church and he says, I have this against you, you've left your first love. It's possible that when we've been Christians for a while, we can leave the love that we used to have for God. That's a very serious warning. And we need to be aware of it. We need to appreciate it. But, you know, it's also possible that we forget that love is genuine. We think, I just don't love my wife the way that I used to. I don't get all palpitating whenever my wife walks into the room anymore. I don't break out in a cold sweat when she takes my hand like I used to when we were first married. I don't do some of the things that I used to do. But my guess is that if you're like me, you still show love. It's still genuine. It just gets shown in different ways. It's one thing to get all passionate about seeing your wife, and it's quite another thing to take care of her when she's sick. Taking care of her when she's sick doesn't seem as impressive as getting passionate. So it may be, and I never want to discount the idea that we could have left our first love. It may also be that we're just forgetting that love progresses. And it grows deeper and deeper and deeper. And no, it's not as passionate as it once was. But that doesn't diminish the reality of the love that we have. So, don't think about how good things were in the past. You know, we do it as churches. We do it as individuals. We do it in our marriages. We do it in the political realm. We do it in all sorts of different ways. Don't think that way. Think clearly. Take an honest stock of what you had and what you left. And don't forget that sometimes as we grow in God, our life becomes more settled. It becomes more tranquil. If you're here tonight and you have not known God, believe me when I tell you that if you put on Christ in baptism, the life that you will live is exciting. We'll help you do that. We'll help you put on Christ. It may be that you've been a Christian for a long time. And it could be that you've let your garments be sullied. It may be that you've left your first love. It may be that you're not doing what you ought to do to grow. But more than likely, you just need to remember that you're growing and it looks a little bit different now. If there's something we can do to pray with you, we want to do that. The effectual fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much, James says. And for that reason, he says, confess your faults one for another, pray one for another that you may be healed. So we want you to think about it. It's an opportunity for us to meet you and help you, as we're going to do in the prayer circles. But we want you to think about it as we stand.